to Mores Podcast Series, Speaking of Changing Legal, where we discuss the leading trends and innovations that are reshaping the way legal work is done. Today's episode features Mores' Daniel Abramoff speaking with Natalie Carter of Duke Energy on top trends for today's busy e-discovery professional. The views expressed in this podcast are the opinions of the people speaking and not necessarily that of the companies they work for.
Hi, I'm Daniel Abramoff with Mores on the business development team, and I'm here with Natalie Carter, Associate General Counsel at Duke Energy. Natalie started her career 18 years ago as an assistant district attorney in Wake County, North Carolina. And in 2007, she went into private practice for 11 years until she joined Duke Energy in 2018 and currently heads up their e-discovery, privacy, and cybersecurity programs. For this interview, we'll be touching on best practices for e-discovery and privacy. Natalie, thank you so much for taking the time to discuss your experience here.
Absolutely, Daniel. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, currently we're seeing AI systems come into play, which is forcing everyone to consider the challenges legal teams are facing. In what ways can legal departments effectively collaborate with AI systems like ChatGPT during e-discovery and be able to balance the strengths of automation with human legal expertise?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So everybody knows right now ChatGPT is all the rage, right? Everywhere you turn, you see that. And so I think one of the key things as legal professionals is to stay open, first of all, to the technology, right? I remember back when my oldest son was in kindergarten, his teacher called it a growth mindset. And so I would encourage the audience to keep that growth mindset, right? Because people are in different stages in their legal careers. And the people who have been practicing law for years and years have done things a certain way. But I would encourage those people to be open to the idea of doing something new, right? Whereas new practitioners just out of law school are going to probably organically be more open to the idea of partnering with ChatGPT. And I look at it as that kind of partnership and collaboration, right? So there's no part of me as a lawyer who's been practicing for, I think it's about 18 years or so now, that says we can rely exclusively on ChatGPT to practice law. But I look at it as a great place to kind of be a jumping off point, right? Or a bouncing off point for ideas, right? Compiling data, testing legal theories, generating ideas, and then vetting that, right? With a lawyer who has the experience, who has the tangible real life experience, who's dealt with clients, who understands the law, who understands that intersection between the law and your client's expectations and your client's needs. That human piece in the practice of law is still very much needed. And in my opinion, won't ever go away, right? The machine can give us great ideas that we can build on, but to rely on it exclusively, in my opinion, I don't see that happening. So I don't think lawyers need to say, oh my goodness, we're only 5 years away from all losing our jobs and having to pivot in our careers, right? I think it is constantly going to be a partnership as the technology evolves and as we learn how to use it in a way that is practical and also ethical, right? I know there have been cases of lawyers who've relied on it exclusively for pleadings. That's not what we want to do, nor what we want to encourage. We want to use it as almost another brain in the room, right? When you think of bouncing something off of a partner, if you're practicing in a law firm, or for me, who's in-house counsel, my colleague who may be practicing longer than I have or practicing in a different area, we collaborate. We bounce ideas off each other. How have you done this in the past? What worked? What didn't work? I think we can use ChatGPT in that same way, another brain in the room, so to speak.
I love that. And that's absolutely, I mean, that's, I think, historically how everyone has always looked at automation, right, is that it will always improve things. But if you focus solely on just the technology aspect, and you'll sort of run into a lot of issues. Right now, organizations are collecting more sensitive data than ever, and hackers are becoming more sophisticated with their attacks. What steps can be taken to create a culture of privacy awareness and responsibility among employees at all levels of the organization, including those not directly involved in data management?
So, another great question, and something that privacy professionals, legal professionals, and also people in the data privacy landscape who may not even be practicing law have to continually think about. I look at it as education and conversation. That's key, right? I do a lot of training on different things. I do a lot of training in my organization on attorney-client privilege, e-discovery issues, and now also data privacy issues. And I think we can't, even though employees are often like, another training, I've got to sit through another training, that really is how you learn. And repetition is the mother of all learning. So as the privacy landscape continues to change, and it's a newer landscape, right? Privacy, cybersecurity, these are newer areas. So we have to continue to teach and learn and evolve and grow as the areas change. We can't rely on what we were doing in data privacy around 2016 or so, which is when really it kind of hit the mainstream. Look at how the laws have changed from 2016 to 2023. Cybersecurity, I don't even know if that was a thing in 2016, right? So we have to make sure that we're educating the enterprise on what people need to be aware of. What is personally identifiable information, right? What is the kind of information that is subject to privacy laws? It's important for our employees to know that because they're dealing with consumer data. They're dealing with their fellow employees' data. And so if they don't at a base level know what is even in the privacy sphere, right, that's a problem from the beginning. So that's something that we have to keep talking about, keep educating people on. And then, like I said, education and then conversation. What are the challenges that these people who are in the trenches, who are doing the work, are facing when they're having to strike that balance between, okay, I have to protect this information because you're telling me there are all these laws out here, but also I don't want to hamstring my work, right? I'm trying to get my job done on a day-to-day basis. So it's keeping that conversation open between the professionals who are telling you what you need to do and also the people who are doing the work. And so I think that's a key part to keeping an organization that is fluid, flexible, agile when you're talking about privacy through all levels of the organization. And I think something to remember too is even though we get a little bogged down with training, and I know I have to take a whole bunch of training at my company as well. So I understand that it's like another training is on the docket, so to speak. You have to be able to make sure that you are constantly learning and getting that information again and again, because if you don't breathe it, if you don't live it, you're not going to retain it on the first or even the second, or quite frankly, even the third try, right? If I go to a presentation on nuclear power plants or transmission lines, I'm sitting there listening and I'm hearing and I'm understanding, but ask me in a month, if I've done nothing with that information, how much of that nuclear plant operations presentation I remember, because I'm not dealing with it on a day-to-day basis. That's the human brain, right? So it's not a critique of any one individual. You can be smart as you can be, but if you're not using the information on a day-to-day basis, you're not going to retain it. So what's the key to that gap, filling that gap? Constant education, constant conversation, constant repetition.
I completely agree. I think that's exactly the perfect way to have people involved without them feeling like they're being bogged down with things they don't know about. And looking at, you know, to your point, 2016, things were quite different. You can imagine how they're going to look in 4 or 5 years as well, just the more these things keep coming up. When companies are looking at their data and trying to determine which is reusable and what would fall under the category of rot data, which is redundant, obsolete, or trivial data, how do you strike a balance between data retention for operational purposes and adhering to privacy principles such as data minimization and storage limitation?
So law, I always look at as this balancing act, right? Especially the e-discovery space is really usually housed in litigation, right? So with litigation are the federal rules of civil procedure and Rule 26 and the proportionality, right? Is what you're doing meet the needs of the case, right? Is it proportional to the needs of the case and weighing that? And not just saying, okay, that the requesting party can scour the earth and request everything under the sun at your company. It has to be proportional to the needs of the case. And to me, that is law in general. You're always kind of striking that balance between what do we have to do to get the job done? What do we have to do to close the deal, close the transaction, settle the case, versus what's it going to cost? What's the manpower it's going to take? What's the actual dollars and cents cost? And so I don't think it's any different with data retention, right? We're having to look at, okay, what do we keep to make sure that we're, again, an agile organization, but what do we get rid of so that we don't increase our risk? as a litigator by training, I know that it's the downstream implications, right? People, as you're looking at what you're doing today, if you're not a litigator, you're not necessarily thinking about the downstream implications, the 5 years, the 10 years down the line, because it takes so long for litigation to arise. So all the stuff that we're doing in this data privacy landscape right now, I'm always thinking a little bit with my e-discovery litigation hat. Yeah, but what's going to, in 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, this is going to come back, because that's just how litigation evolves. It takes time, right?
Wow. That's really interesting. Just having those skills coming from litigation and putting them into other areas where obviously they're all very well connected. But that's a great point. When managing third-party relationships, such as contractors and vendors, what strategies can be employed to effectively manage those relationships to ensure they handle your customer data in accordance with the company's privacy policies?
So you want to be vetting things really early on. You want to do your homework, right? You want to make sure that before anybody's eagerly signing on the dotted line, that you know exactly how this company that you're going to partner with manages, handles, discards data. And is that written into the contract that you guys are going to use? But let's say, for instance, it's a third party and they're saying, here, these are our terms and conditions, and we'd like you to partner with us, and we're both going to sign on the dotted line. You want to make sure that it has everything that you need to make sure to protect customer data. How is this company retaining the data? What do they do when they no longer need it? Now, here's the tricky part. With the fact that data privacy laws are continuing to change, there's no federal law, it's state by state. When you entered into that agreement with the vendor, that wasn't even maybe contemplated. And understandably so, right? Because of the fact that it's a newer thing, it may be a newer law that was enacted. So you have to then navigate that piece kind of live in real time and say, here's the request we've received. Here's what we need to do. Now, the data privacy laws have exceptions built into them because there are going to be contractual exceptions, right? We're like, we cannot get rid of this data for whatever the reasons are, whether it creates some kind of legal risk that you can justifiably say we've got to maintain this data. But those are all things that you want to now, as we know that we are in this data privacy sphere and it's only going to get more intense, not less intense at this point, as each state continues to enact its own laws. You want to make sure that's something that you're thinking of, that you have a team that is cognizant of that, keeping that in the front of their mind. And then are you auditing kind of your policies and relationships with these vendors, right? So you signed an agreement with them in, you know, 2020 or 2019, and the landscape was different. But now it's 2023, you're still in business with that vendor. What about going back and auditing that policy and saying, we've got to update the language, because our policies at our company have changed. And so now how we partner with you has to change. And so you want to think of a good cadence for kind of auditing those policies and those relationships and having those conversations with third-party vendors so that you can make sure that you're maintaining customer data, right? And that you're in compliance with the law for the jurisdictions that your business operates in.
Absolutely. I think as more vendors come into the picture and more, unfortunately, more third-party breaches happen, it's more important than ever to be able to get a wrangle over all your vendors. So I completely appreciate that. Being a vendor myself.
Are you taking notes, Daniel?
I am, actually. No. How can you develop and maintain a dynamic privacy program that evolves with the rapid advancements in technology and changes in privacy regulations?
So I think I mentioned with the first question that you asked me or so that, you know, I'm a mother, right? And I think as I have pretty young children, and as they grow and develop, one of the things I know that I as a parent have to make sure I maintain is that growth mindset. I don't think it's anything different when we talk about privacy law, cybersecurity law, because these are such ever-changing fields. So you've got to, if you want to have a dynamic program, which by definition means things are changing and you're keeping up with the technology and you're keeping up with the statutes that are being enacted, you've got to have that growth mindset. As a parent, I know one of the worst things I could do is say, listen, this is the way we did it when I was a kid. This is the way we're going to do it now. And we're going to do it this way when you have kids, right? That would be the worst parenting strategy I could employ because it's not practical. I think it's the same thing when you talk about data privacy programs. Well, this is the way we did it in 2020, or this is the way we did it in 2015. And we're going to stick with it because it worked and it grew our business. And this is how we're going to proceed. You can't afford to do that, especially when you think about our workforces. Our workforces are intergenerational. And it is by definition that people who are 20 and people who are 60 may communicate differently. They do business differently. So we as a company have to even navigate that, that a 20-year-old may say, I use WhatsApp and I use text messaging and all of those apps have data privacy implications. And if we kind of turn a blind eye and say, well, that's not the way we want to do business. That's not the way we should do business. Now, yes, we have prohibitions, right? We have policies in place about what mediums you can use to communicate. And we articulate that to the enterprise. But we still have to be aware of the fact that these technologies are emerging. So you can't just turn a blind eye and say, nope, for the rest of the time that we operate as a company, we'll never allow you to do anything but talk on email. That's it. That's not a fluid, agile way to do business. You have to be able to say the world is changing. Technology is changing. How do we put the guardrails in place? How do we put the governance in place to make sure that we are partnering with the technology like ChatGPT, but also making sure that we are keeping customer data safe, that we are keeping proprietary information safe, and that we're doing things ethically and reasonably and defensibly, right? So it's this constant keeping your mind open, figuring out who are the experts in the field, right? Whether that's consultants, whether that's outside counsel. These are new areas of law. And so you have to know enough to know what you don't know and reach out to people who may know a little bit more than you and say, what are you doing? Whether it's benchmarking with another company, whether it's reaching out to outside counsel who counsels tons of clients on the same issues all throughout the country or all throughout the world, making sure that you're touching base with those folks so you can keep cutting edge, right? Even as an e-discovery attorney and professional, that's always what I'm trying to do. I try to stay ahead of the case law is what I tell my team, right? Because again, litigation takes a while for the wheels to turn. So by the time you get sued on an issue, that issue has been percolating for years and years and years. So my constant goal is how do we stay ahead of litigation? How do we stay ahead of the case law to try to make sure that we're not caught back on our heels, not having thought through an issue? I think you have to do the same thing when it comes to data privacy, when it comes to the laws and how they're changing. And you want to have a team that is not just great at getting things done when it comes to data privacy, but is also strategic and thinking ahead, because again, you're trying to keep up. You're trying to keep up. So you want someone who is strategically thinking, here's what we could do to kind of get to the next step, to take it to the next level. Not just, this is what you told me to do, this is what I'm going to do. Strategic thinking, I think, in this fluid area of law is pretty critical.
That's an excellent answer. And just to think about the idea of being able to get ahead of the lesson instead of the lesson being given to you, I think that is excellent. Natalie, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom and experiences. And I think I can speak for everyone who is watching or listening that this was an incredibly valuable interview.
Well, I am so happy to have done it. I hope the audience does get some valuable information and some takeaways, right? You always hope when you listen to these things that you have a little nugget that you can take away and maybe implement in your own life, in your own business. And I hope the audience has at least one valuable takeaway. But thank you for having me, Daniel.
Thank you so much.